where entrepreneurs come to grow. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Now is time to interview our other two entrepreneurs on here. I'm going to start with Nate Amadon with Form 100 Consulting. Nate, tell us all about your company, how you got started.
We're a premium staffing and execution partner for technology organizations. And so we operate in the contingent workforce staffing realm, and we really focus on large enterprises that use contractors and vendors as a strategy. And what makes us unique and premium is that we only source from a pool of veterans, people who are former military leaders, so officers and senior NCOs. And so we try to find people who have led teams and programs in very dynamic military environments. And then we bring them in to technology organizations to drive alignment, communication, instill some process discipline, and really just get everybody on the same page so we know what's going on in a technology organization.
That's great. Who are your major customers? Who's your target market?
We actually really love non-tech first companies. So these are large brand names that you know of and heard of, but they don't really realize that they're a technology organization yet. And so they operate software development and building of products and data and all the things that a modern company needs to run. But they're doing it still in a culture of manufacturing or services. And so those things really start to clash, and there can be a lot of dysfunction between how we actually get technical work done and how it gets funded and how it gets reported. So we act a lot like that middle layer, doing program management and project management and really helping everybody stay aligned so the organizations can deliver value. It's amazing how expensive technology and software development actually is for large enterprises. I mean, a software development team typically is going to cost an organization $2 to $3 million a year just for one team. And these big organizations can have hundreds of these teams. And oftentimes it's so confusing and they don't really know what they're working on, which sounds crazy to say, but it's true. If you've ever worked in a large enterprise, they can almost be not delivering anything, right? These organizations are just kind of flushing that down the toilet. And so we come in to really make sure everyone's aligned and on the same page.
You mentioned that the manufacturing side and the IT sometimes clash. Can you give an example of that, maybe explain it a little bit more for our audience?
Yeah. So if you started in a manufacturing, or let's just say services, you build a product that's physical, and you can go onto the factory floor and you can see how that widget's being built, right? You can look at it. You can see where there's bottlenecks. You can see where there's issues. It's more visible than if you're trying to do the same thing, except for technology, because they could be on an engineer's computer or in one of a bunch of different technology environments that are being run. What happens a lot of times is there's really just a lack of clarity on what's going on and the status and what's blocking things from actually being delivered. And then the executive culture that's used to having more visibility doesn't have that. And so there becomes a clash, because you get a lot of like, well, you said it was going to be done in 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 6 months, and it ends up always being delayed. We try to put in the right type of processes and bring in leaders who know how to operate in these kind of dynamic environments to make sure that leaders in the technology world can see, we say lower the water level so we can see where all the rocks are. And that's really how to provide for technology organizations.
And that's really important, because things do always seem to take longer. We're working with somebody who's implementing some AI in the law firm, and it's like, well, can we just use it? Well, it's almost done. Well, can't we just use it? It looks like it's done to me. Can't we just use it? Oh, well, you know, a couple of things aren't quite working. It's just like been going on and on that way. So you bring in leaders. So what characteristics do they have that really helps solve this problem? Because I think it's a problem for a lot of companies.
I started this because I started leaving the Air Force, not going the flying route, and trying to get a job somewhere. And I had a bunch of experience. I had a lot of education, but on my resume, it basically just said pilot. And so when I would go into interviews, I would continually get passed over because I didn't have enough experience. And so I found my way into a large technology company as a vendor. And I realized when I got in there that the skills I learned in the military as an officer and a pilot were really, really valuable in the private sector. The ability to make decisions without all the information, to really focus on the mission and what's the goal, and to just have some of the basic communication and processes in place. And so I actually tried to get other military veterans that were coming out with similar experience hired, and my consulting firm wouldn't do it. The organizations wouldn't really do it. And so there was just this gap that I saw between an untapped talent pool coming out of the military and technology organizations that really needed that type of skill set. And so that's really what we look for. When someone's been in the military as a senior NCO or an officer, they've gone through a ton of leadership training. They've gone through the trials of failing at leadership and how to work on a team, how to work with a team, and then really how to execute to accomplish the mission. That's what we look for. And from a recruiting standpoint, it's great because we just have a really high trust with the people we're bringing in. We already know that, you know, those people are going to show up on time. You know, they're not going to complain. They have high integrity. And so that mix has really been good for us.
Pretend I'm an IT executive and you're pitching me on the need for leadership in my organization. What kinds of things would you tell me that somebody trained in the military services, that their skill set is something that could help my organization?
So most likely you've already been using some sort of staffing companies. You have a pool of different companies that you use that will bring in like technical program managers and project managers and scrum masters. And most of the time they're kind of hit or miss. It's almost like you're just rolling the dice, hoping that you get somebody that's good. And the more experience that you look for on a resume doesn't equate to better performance once they get on your team. And so there's a lot of frustration you're probably feeling, and most executives are feeling in that realm. And so we bring a higher trust level. When someone on our team comes in and works with inside an organization, we're really focused on building high performing teams and programs and providing the visibility to know what's going on. And so a lot of our clients are really frustrated. You know, I have a lot of empathy for IT executives because they're the ones that always have to see, always give the bad news to the board, or always give the bad news because things are always delayed. And it's because they can't see what's going on with enough runway to actually fix it. And so that's what we bring to someone like you or someone that's in an executive position. Understanding how you can help and where you can make things better so you can improve delivery.
So how long do you work with the company then? Do you go in and fix everything and then leave, or do you keep working with them for a long time?
So we'll do both. We'll come in and do transformations of organizations when things are just completely falling apart. A lot of times when there's large mergers and acquisitions, when you have, let's say, a company that starts with two or three teams and then gets a huge influx of capital, or they merge with another team that has, or another organization that has an additional 5 or 10 teams. Now the stuff mm-hmm. that you were doing in 2 to 3 software development teams doesn't scale to 10 or 12. And so we'll come in and help build that program and build the processes and the communications and all the things that help make delivery possible. And then we'll a lot of times just come in as augmented staff, as contractors and vendors. And in those scenarios, you know, once we get in with clients, they don't really let us go. And so we have longevity. We can be on accounts for 3 to 5 to 10 years.
I see Leah thinking. You look like you're thinking really hard. Did you have a comment or question?
Well, I'm interested, Nate, just with your military background. So my father and grandfather also were in the service. And I know it's kind of a particular framework that you all use. And, you know, I had growing up as well, just like a lot of discipline, a lot of focus. And so I can see how that would be highly impactful to organizations. And as you meet with organizations, both sort of large and small, do you see opportunities where that framework comes into play and how you incorporate it into your value add as well?
Absolutely. And I am so optimistic about this idea and about the model of bringing in military leaders into organizations, especially with AI coming out, because we talk about all the benefits and we have a good conversation about all the amazing things you can do with AI, but it can be a double-edged sword, especially in large organizations, because now you're moving 4 or 5 times faster. And if you're not aligned on where to go, that's a problem, right? I mean, if you fly faster in the wrong direction, that's not good.
Right. I also think, Nate, too, just from my experience growing up with, you know, sort of this military family, there's something here, too, around, I think, integrity and ethics. Yes. That come into play, that's at a different level. I mean, I do think you're operating at a different level in those areas as well. And like with AI, I think that's also an incredibly important aspect.
Absolutely. So we're trust is going to be at a premium, and you're not going to be able to monitor everything that's going on with the speed of things that are happening. And so trust and alignment. And I keep talking a lot about alignment, because it's so important for leaders to have a vision and have everyone on that team understand that vision. When you're moving slower, you can course correct more. But if you're misaligned and things are moving faster, now all of a sudden you can go astray really quickly. You know, you could even make catastrophic decisions in those environments. And so making sure that there's a tight communication loop, feedback loops are going to be really important. And I could, you know, talk for hours about that. But yes, I think, to your point, Leah, that integrity and trust and the ability to have confidence that everyone on your team is marching to the same beat.
Yeah, it's interesting, because over the last 20 years or so, there's been a lot of different philosophies around management. And some of, I think in some ways, people have almost moved a little bit away from sort of the military model, or what we think of as the military model, where there's a lot of top down as opposed to, you know, bottom up management or leading from behind management. What's your opinion on how sort of the military approach sort of works with some of these other management theories that seem to be less top down focused and more maybe bottom up or group oriented?
So I think about this as on a spectrum, let's say. If you have total top down command and control type of management style, you're not going to be effective. But if you just throw everybody in a room and see what comes out, kind of no structure at all, that's also chaos. And I don't think the military is as top-down command and control. It looks that way, but in execution, it's really not. And so from my experience in the Air Force and flying is we had this idea of centralized command, decentralized execution. And I really like that idea, because at some point we need a direction for the organization to make sure we're all aligned on what it is we're going after. Like, who's our customer, right? Why does our team exist? Why does our program exist? Why does our organization exist? And then what are we trying to gain? What's the opportunity in the market? And so that should be pretty centralized, right? I mean, we should have a pretty good idea from the C-suite down what our objective is as a company. But then when it comes to execution, it should be a lot more decentralized. Meaning teams should go off and experiment. They should try different things. They should do whatever it takes to complete the mission. And the military actually operates a lot like that. So when I would fly a mission, they would say, hey, you have to bring cargo or troops or whatever from this point to that point, and then provide some guidance. But then when it came to execution, I made decisions. I did what I needed to do to execute towards the mission. And that distinction is something that is really missing, I think, in technology organizations. They either have way too much of the command and control, do everything exactly how we're supposed to do it. And there's this idea of waterfall project management that is very much like, hey, here's everything we're going to do. And then on the other side, there's this idea of like agile project management, where you just are constantly iterating to figure things out. And you can go too far that direction, too. And so how you mix those two things together is really how organizations turn into high-performing teams.
Speaking for entrepreneurs, how big should an organization be before they consider bringing in somebody maybe from the military who has those levels of skill? I mean, you work with larger companies, big companies. A lot of people in our audience are entrepreneurs. They don't have these large teams. But when is that kind of structure appropriate? When would somebody bring somebody in that, who has those skills? Or is it really up to the CEO and management team, you know, up to a certain point?
I'm a huge proponent of hiring veterans across the board. And the veteran communities across section of our society. But I do think whether you're just starting to hire your first person or you're looking for a partner in your, you know, 100,000 person organization, you should give a veteran resume a second look, because at the core, there's just some fundamentals, what I call foundational skills, that you're going to have. Like if you've gone through basic training, you understand how to work on a team, you know how to communicate effectively. There are just some of these intangibles, high integrity, you have more grit. There's just some of those things that I think are really valuable to any organization at any level. That's an important distinction. And I would go in and say not all veterans are going to work out for your specific, you know, need or what you're looking for. But I think you should give them a second look because it reduces the risk of hiring someone that doesn't have those foundational skills.
Nate, I'm Don with Form 100 Consulting.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to the podcast and leave a quick review. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and X, and subscribe to our YouTube channel for bonus content.
Learn more at PassageToProfitShow.com.